Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. If you like the strange or paranormal, you've come to the right place. But don't say I didn't warn you.
Hello, and thanks again for listening to the Don't Break the Oath podcast. Now, I got a great interview lined up today, touching on gnomes, dwarves. Are they real? Is there any sites around the world where, you know, these places are just too small for humans to inhabit? So, who was living there? All that crazy stuff coming up. Yeah, that's with Sylvie. If you want to check out any of her work, just head over to either New Earth on YouTube, and you'll find her videos there, which are, you know, pretty good videos, and that's how I found her. Or you can go over to megaliths.org and make sure you put the S on the end of megaliths, otherwise you'll get another website that's not hers. Okay, so megaliths.org. Okay, also I want to thank Brian from ghostquests.weebly.com. If you guys can head over there, be much appreciated. Basically, it's a networking site for the paranormal researchers and enthusiasts. So if you're into the paranormal, it's worth checking out. And he's kindly featured us on his podcast wall, which is great. Also, Kel, I'm presuming this is Kelly W. Kel W. 1961. Thank you very much for your review on iTunes. And Barbara Suffolk, thank you very much for your review on iTunes as well, although obviously yours was criticising us for the sound quality, which I'm aware of. The sound quality on the first few shows was shit, basically. It's improved as we're going along. We're in the process of getting new mics and all the rest of it. Also, this, you know, the Skype side of things, obviously there's not much I can do about that. I can clean it up best I can, but if it's a bad connection, it's a bad connection. It's just one of those things. But yeah, thank you very much for your review anyway. But if you've got any feedback like that, then just let us know at dbtopodcast@gmail.com. Also, another big thank you to Jerry and Tracy at Hillbilly Horror Stories. If you haven't checked them out, check them out. And incidentally, if there's anybody listening today or to any of the shows that's come across on the recommendation from them, then let me know at the email address or on Twitter, and then I can give them the feedback, because the help's much appreciated. Right, on with the show. Okay, so I start by asking whether she believes that our history is being covered up.
Most of it. I think maybe in general some 20% of what we read in the history book would be correct, and the rest is just fiction.
So you think 80% is fiction?
About,
yeah.
In general, I can't, of course, measure precisely.
No, but it's a general thing. I mean, I would definitely say, I'm probably up there with you, actually. I'm probably as high as 80, but I'd definitely say 50-50, without a doubt. But when we talk about gnomes and dwarfs, are we talking about the same creature?
To my understanding, which is very limited, there are various races of dwarves and gnomes themselves, and also there are like tribes or variations that border there between men as we know them and dwarves. So it's not just gnomes or dwarves, or even if they are different or not, it's just a large variety of tribes, as far as I have heard.
So we could be looking at maybe like pygmy humans, would you say?
Probably.
Yeah.
Also, not just in terms of extinct races. Even now, I mean, in Asia, there are so many short people, especially in Bengal.
Mm.
I mean, they are like half size than us. I find it difficult to imagine this to be a play of evolution. Why would people need to get so short there? I just don't see any logic in that. Well, just a couple of hundred kilometers away live tribes which are our size. So
yeah, that's a strange disparity, isn't it? You know, you've got people living in the same area that are, you know, modern human standard size, if you will, and then you've got, it's the same in I think the Congo's got some pygmy tribes living in it, and maybe the Amazon rainforest as well. So maybe we are a mixture of or they are a mixture of what's gone before. But we're and I know your YouTube channel is really good for this, but where are these dwarfs, if you will, where were these said to have lived, you know, countries wise
Most of the known, like, historic sites that are gnome size are in Asia Minor, Europe and Asia, all of Asia, not only Minor. But in Asia Minor, in the Middle East, there is a high concentration also, and in Siberia. And probably there could have been also lots of such dwellings in the more densely populated regions of Asia, but simply because of modern construction, we have destroyed their artifacts and dwellings. That's also a possibility.
Mm. You think that was deliberately done or just accident?
Some accident, some of course deliberate, like in the case of the Drapa dwarfs from China. It's a typical story. They find bodies, they find artifacts, and after that nobody knows anything and everything disappears. I mean, we've heard this again and again, so yeah.
Yeah, so on the bodies, then I guess that's a good place to start. Is there any known bodies of these people anywhere on display, or is it all hidden away?
No, we still have some. For example, I'm trying to make a collection in the dwarf section of my megaliths directory. For example, here we have mummy in from the San Pedro Mountain from the United States. It's still here. Then Brian Foster, he is doing an excellent work in Peru. He's filming and showing all kinds of skulls and skeletons. Some of them are pretty dwarfish. And of course, the officially accepted dwarfs of Micronesia from the island of Palau, and then the other one from the Flores Islands in Indonesia. Those are not denied. Those skeletons have not disappeared. They're just out of the spotlight.
So these dwellings, then, because when you look into folklore or, you know, storybooks and that talk about these things, they always seem to say that they lived in caves or underground, these kinds of things. But, I mean, is that true? And also, I mean, you've actually seen dwellings that, you know, us as humans just couldn't get in. Care to elaborate on that?
Yeah, I myself visited such in Spain. That was my first experience. I mean, you need to be there and bump your head a few times in the stones while you try to walk a short distance very carefully. And then you realize that this was not designed by people of our size. Whatever they try to tell you, it was for hiding, it was for storage. It doesn't suit any of these purposes. And often, I mean, it's that simple. The entrances are too small. They were That's in Spain, for example.
Yeah.
Also, possibly some of the tunnels, but you can't even go there because the entrance is too small, or it has been enlarged because it was turned into a tourist site. The one I visited had places the doors between the rooms were visibly widened for the tourists. But
so you mean like after the fact, you know, people have gone in there and opened them up so it looks more acceptable to our eye?
Well, that's they have made it just so that you can enter. Otherwise, the hall is too small. The larger-bodied people, they get stuck. They get stuck even nowadays in some of the doors.
Mm.
Many of the openings in between the chambers are for thin people only. Many of them, not only one. And walking it's impossible. I mean, crawling is also very difficult. I hurt my back. And, you know, you go on four paws, on all four over there.
Mm. We're talking, in a lot of these cases, these are carved straight into the bedrock or straight into the, you know, into a cave or rather than built. Is that right?
Yeah. That's all I saw, and that was in Spain.
Mm.
Now, here in this region of Germany, Switzerland, and Austria, we have the so-called Erdstelle. Now, those are so numerous that many of them are still in pristine condition. They're not so much of a touristy thing. And they're not protected by law. This is a very easy way to make people destroy them themselves.
Okay.
Which is going on with, which is going on very fast, actually. But here, yeah, I was myself in a tunnel. I couldn't even reach the end because it was just too narrow, even to pass through, even to crawl. Not to mention waving around hammers and carrying baskets with stones.
Yeah.
This is just
actually
out of question.
Doing excavation. So in that tunnel that you was trapped in almost, was there a room at the end?
Yes, it was my boyfriend. He was crawling first. And he was always hoping there will be a wider place, but it got narrower and narrower to the point that he couldn't turn. Then we didn't know what to do. And then we decided just to go on. And finally he found, after 10 meters or something, a place where he could finally turn back. And yes, I believe there was 20 more meters and it was even narrower.
Hmm. And what's the archaeologist's reason for this? I know you said like sort of storage or maybe hiding. I mean, is that the accepted explanation for it there as well?
Well, they say it's a mystery. The official explanation is they're mysterious. This is a very elegant way to escape any explanation while you neglect the sites, put them out of the spotlight. And also local people, they're not aware of their importance and destroy them themselves. For example, in one village of Austria, the older people still remember that there were, 64 such tunnels in this village alone. Now, within their own generation, they have all disappeared. People building their cellars, cementing them over, plowing them over, or anything you can imagine. And currently only two or three are left somewhere, but they are in private houses, you know, full of whatever, wine or potatoes.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah, that tends to happen. So who did the attribute these tunnels and that to? you know, the, you know, the historians.
No, it's a mystery. The Erdstelle, they say, we don't know. It could be medieval, right. It could be older. Also, the connection with this long system of long tunnels that stretch from England to Turkey. No connection is made with them. Some of them are also very small. Now that network is officially accepted, but it's again mystery. Nobody connects them.
Are you talking about a tunnel that links Britain to Turkey?
You can find articles, scientific articles about this, and it's called an extensive network of underground tunnels.
Yeah.
This is a lot of work, I mean, to connect practically full of Europe, you know, in such a way. But when you start researching where can you go and visit, you reach almost a dead end. It's always a private property, nobody knows, no publicity, and there are sections, there are photographs, they are often confused with Erdstelle. Sometimes I don't know what should be classified as Erdstelle and what should be classified as what they call Stone Age underground tunnel. Sometimes I don't see any difference.
These tunnels, is it obviously man-made or, you know, machine-made?
Yeah, the tunnels, definitely, they're...
they're not something that just happened to the, you know,
most
naturally.
Definitely, they're man-made. Some of them are big, some of them are small. This is the keyword that I told you. You can find a bit information online, prehistoric tunnels connecting UK all the way from UK to Turkey. There is something, because there is scientific research and some photos, but what is this something and how can you see it? That's where you cannot find any further information.
That's fascinating. Do we have any indication of how old these tunnels are? I know it would be difficult to date stone, but is there anything been found inside them that we could date?
No, of course, there is no question of any precise dating at all. But I find them not that extremely old because they are still connected with the current ground level. So,
not buried under just debris, just general debris. So they're still present on the surface, yeah.
Yeah. So based on that, they be at most a couple of thousand years old. Also in Spain there are some windows still overlooking the valley because it's a very high cliff. So that makes me assume that they are much younger than, for example, some parts of the rock cut cities in Turkey, also in Italy, in Spain. These rock cut cities, they're very similar to these Erdstelle or dwarfish dwellings, but they seem to be much older, visibly much older because of the scale of erosion. It's like a full mountain has been eaten up by erosion and maybe something from the core has remained. Barely any traces of where did it end, because that, of course, falls apart first. So they are much older rock-cut ruins than the dwarfish dwellings. The dwellings of the little people seem to be relatively newer.
So when we... obviously, we have to assume these... these little people were physical beings, and I've read a couple of accounts of trade between dwarfs, if you will, and the Scandinavians or whatever. I mean, is that something you've run across?
Yes, there are such historic accounts also in Russia. The dwarves liked to mine, and couple of hundred years ago, they would trade with people. Also, we have... some artifacts from them. I'm not sure if it has an English term, but in Russian they call it Permsky Zvirilny Stil. That's the name of the style. of the art that we have left from them. Of course, they are telling us that these were a tribe of big people, people like us, but the local people don't think so. They have different memory, and those memories are not very old, just a couple of hundred years ago. The elders would have regular contacts with the dwarf tribes.
And what, you know, these artifacts, what material are we talking about them being made of? Are they generally metal?
Yeah, all of them are metal only, yeah.
Isn't that interesting how our own folklore always shows dwarves mining, you know, digging out these metals and all the rest of it, and then we find these metal artifacts that are attributed to dwarves. I think that's pretty compelling. But not only that, but we do find mines that have already been excavated. You know, when we go to we find a new area to mine, and it's already been, it looks like someone's already been at it. And I know there's various different reasons, different, you know, the Anunnaki and people like that have been said this is a possibility that these are them. But could we be looking at the remnants of these dwarfs actually doing this?
I think some of it definitely, because that's the case in Siberia.
Mm.
That was the reason the first Russian expeditions of scientists were dispatched there to find out who was mining the supposedly virgin mines.
Mm.
And the locals knew very well. Some of the first locals that they met some hundred years ago still remember the times when messengers from people and dwarves could communicate anytime. They knew how to find each other. But I don't think this is always the case. For example, on the bottom of the oceans near what was the name? The Dominican Republic, for example, and other places, there are obvious traces of, I don't know, mining or shifting earth in gigantic proportions. I don't know for what reason exactly. That looks really, really very artificial. Not very, but absolutely. It has even excavator marks. I don't think we can attribute that to dwarves just because dwarves used to mine.
Yeah.
I think many races used to mine here, probably. You know, there are old accounts that even some races from other spots came to look for minerals or precious metals here. Why not?
Well, no, if it's in abundance, someone's going to come looking for it, aren't they? So, you know, that's interesting that you're saying about these in Siberia, these scientists actually met with people who could remember tales of these dwarfs, and the actual, you know, could almost summon them up when needed at will. But what was the, did they give any reason as to why the trade link was broken?
Well, there is no such information in the story I have read, but I can tell you my personal take on it.
Absolutely.
We are just becoming rapidly more and more ignorant and violent.
No, yeah.
And also other thing that crosses my mind is all kinds of social engineering projects are going on nowadays, of which we know very little. And some of them are disturbing these natural waves, the Schumann resonances, which we need to be, which we require to be healthy. And also they connect us to our dimensions in other realities. So when these waves are disturbed by all kinds of equipment, not necessarily something that is weaponized and sent with big antennas, that's one idea, but also the Wi-Fi's and things like that. This is enormous wave pollution around us. So the dwarves, we know from all the legends that they want to remain They want to continue functioning in more dimensions. They are very much into magic.
Yeah.
They are not interested in our modern stuff, you know, cell phones. They prefer to use telepathy. That's their way of life. So I guess they're going underground. Probably still there are some left. And they're hiding there. And probably this wave frequency pollution around us is one thing they really want to escape. They don't want to be blind for other dimensions as we have voluntarily chosen to be. And these Schumann resonances, they are still there underground. Like scientists, they can't even catch these waves anymore because of pollution. And one way that they can still measure them is going deep underground, where the artificial frequency pollution does not penetrate, and what I call the pulse of Mother Earth, the Schumann resonances are still to be felt.
So almost like some sort of the Earth's giving off a frequency that can almost what advances if we was to access it. I mean, what's it do? In your opinion,
the Schumann frequency, the Schumann resonance, the Schumann resonance is required for a normal person to remain healthy and connected with her or his higher self. When you lack this, you gradually tend to get sick and tired. And because the human body is designed in such a way that it changes when the circumstances change, we also devolve when we are exposed a longer time, especially in terms of few generations, one after another. We devolve into beings that are even more blind. In terms of the third eye, perceiving the astral, in terms of intuition, things like this. Becoming more and more senseless and disconnected from higher vibrations and functioning only in survival mode. Just daily things.
Animalistic rather than spiritual. I mean, I have a theory, and I've spoke about it a bit, but it goes along those lines. But it's almost like you know, like children are more susceptible to seeing ghosts. You hear these stories all the time where, you know, children can see things that, you know, adults can't see, and it almost goes along with what you're saying, that as they develop and get older, these, you know, radiations and all the rest of it that's around us, and the food that we eat, and all the chemicals and all this, it almost knocks this sense out of them. And obviously there's still people around, you know, mediums and stuff like that, that can still see ghosts and that, but is that, would you say that was sort of what you're saying there, is similar thing?
Yes, absolutely. Originally, the human race, we were all mediums and shamans. I mean, this is in the legends, and also we are losing, at least in terms of the last few thousand and especially the last few hundred years, we are losing these abilities more and more rapidly, at least. Most of us now, lately some people are trying to awaken. There is talk about the new golden age. I hope this will happen.
Me too.
But the masses, they're mostly living in hypnosis of their cell phones. It's getting, yeah.
I think worse
by the day.
We're absolutely sleepwalking into becoming robots. You know, physically and metaphorically. So, and it's interesting that, like you say, a lot of cultures used to use dance, rhythmic drumming, and all this to access the spiritual realm, if you will. And then as times progress, we've needed artificial ways to get there, you know, drugs and all this kind of thing. So it is like what you're saying, it's almost like as we're progressing, we're actually losing connection to that spiritual world, which I find interesting. But the underground thing's interesting as well, because with these ancient cultures, you tend to find that, yes, they're built above the ground. You know, you can use the pyramid as an example, but you see what's above the ground, but you don't see what's underground. And it's got underground chambers almost trying to access this frequency or whatever it is the earth is giving off. You know, maybe that's along the same lines, because it's not just the pyramids, it's like you find caves in Malta that have been hand carved out, you know. I think there's other ones in Europe as well. So do you think people were willingly trying to access this frequency then?
I don't know if these underground chambers also had insulational purpose in terms of frequencies, because yes, we have legends of wars of the gods, which resembled very much our modern nuclear weapons. So some of them could be bunkers in that sense. Also, like Alexander Kotemin, he is working on the version that they were healing chambers where these Schumann resonance frequencies would be used for rejuvenation and healing. Or it could be even in some cases much more simple explanation, heat insulation, you know, living under earth provides kind of more stable temperature, not such big amplitudes as on the surface. My personal opinion is that it depends how old are they. Like in the case of the rock cut cities, that is an era much older than, for example, the chambers of the pyramids. Or also in Russia, we have these chambers at Kabardino-Balkaria. Yeah. And just yesterday, I was looking at another very interesting site in Turkey. It's called the Belevi Mausoleum. Excuse me if I don't pronounce it correct in English. How is it called? Mausoleum?
Mausoleum, yeah.
Mausoleum. So that's in Turkey. And if you Google that, you will see, yes, some sort of interesting megalithic structure. But when somebody went at the spot and went in the underground portions, wow, I mean, that's like the Osirian in Egypt. Same absolutely gigantic blocks that... the ceiling of an entire room would be a single block.
Okay.
And, yeah, even...
And there's pictures of this, is there?
Yes, I think I'll make a video about it soon, because it was quite shocking of how many big megaliths we have never even heard about. And they're just out there in the fields. The full thing is not even fenced. And yeah, some people know about it, but they show you the overground part only. So there are surprises every day in this field.
No, that's interesting. What do we know about, because a lot of these chambers have a really high acoustic properties. Some megaliths do as well. I mean, Stonehenge is noted for that acoustic properties. So do we know, and actually the Blue Rocks that they quarried were quarried for that purpose. So do we know anything about these, you know, the little people and the, whether they knew about these acoustic properties, or is that something we still don't understand?
No, I personally don't have any reliable information on this one.
Because we hear, you know, you hear tales of these, you know, these giant rocks that we're talking about being quarried and moved and all that. And we hear tales all the time of levitation and almost being able to channel a frequency to levitate stone, which, you know, to our ears sounds absolutely impossible. But, you know, is there anything in any of the artifacts that were found, or, you know, anything, any ancient writings that, you know, could allude to that?
No, what we know is very general. I personally, I'm convinced that sound was used widely, if not exclusively, in all kinds of building and anything in the ancient world, because that's what all legends tell us. You know, the magician, he casted the spell, which spell is, again, vibration. It's a special word, or he sung something.
Yeah, you always get the magic word. Yeah.
The magic word. Yeah. But now, how exactly they did it, I think this is largely speculative, and people have some theory, and which is mostly fantasy, and then they think it's confirmed just because the ancients used sound. Well, they used, but it doesn't mean they used it in the way everybody imagines. So, yes, they did, but how exactly, I think we are still very, very far away, except and those attempts, you know, we levitate small objects already with sound.
Yeah, yeah.
That is the first step in making the magic a science, what we call magic, to start calling it science. And also it borders the topic of transforming thoughts into what we call reality, or three-dimensional reality. We already have devices, for example, for disabled people. They can move an artificial hand with the power of their thoughts. These are products that anybody can purchase already.
Mm.
For example, when you think of, I don't know, doing something with the right hand that produces certain brain waves, and they can be recorded by a device and later on transformed into a mechanical movement by the device. So, yeah, this is always what the shamans did. They used the power of their thought and sound vibrations, which are also fortunately nowadays accepted more and more as a tangible thing.
Yeah.
Because they can be recorded with devices. So what about plugging in the few things together, the two things together, the technology that is activated by your thoughts or by the sound vibrations? We already have speech recognition systems. What about combining this with some sort of a device that levitates objects? Still, we can lift very light things, but I mean, that's how it is with every technology. You start with something small.
Mm.
So I don't see any problem in turning the magic into technology, except one, the fact that all such discoveries are hijacked from the public domain. We don't even know how far they have reached. Actually, we don't get the benefits. I mean, even simple things like solar cars, we know that they're possible. Even that, the commercial models are ready since, I don't know, was it decades or something like that, and still they are not being manufactured. This is the only problem.
Yeah, they've had the technology for water-powered cars for, what, 30, 40 years now, but we still haven't got any. And like you say, you go to get a painting for something and you realise it's already been taken out. So you can't go and build it yourself, so... And like you say, that'll probably be the case with these types of technologies as well. You'll probably go and find that somebody's already doing it somewhere. We just don't know about it.
And yeah, that's the main problem. And that's on lower level. On higher level, I think that all these mechanical devices are far inferior than doing it directly by sound without the need of these mechanic intermediums. I don't know if that's the correct word. That's the way shamans heal and influence events around. That's the right way to do it. And yeah, here it's not only about keeping such things secret. Here, humanity as a whole, we will not take advantage of whatever knowledge is out there just because of narrow-mindedness and living in a small matchbox.
I was going to say, is it possible that our brains are not able to function in the way that they used to function? Or do you think it's still in there, we just need to access it?
Certainly many of our original capabilities of humans are dormant nowadays, that's for sure, in terms of accessing the astral. They had been subdued for generations, and so I believe we are somewhat of a poor version, a joke of the original human. But if we reverse this in course of I don't know how many generations, we will gradually activate again all these senses that we had.
No, I find it interesting. I mean, you mentioned him earlier, but we had Brian Forster on a couple of shows back, and we was looking at some of these buildings that, you know, the technology that went into building these structures was far and away superior to the people that came after, you know, and then built their structures on top. So something in our history is definitely off. And like you say, you can see it in the, you know, the caves that you're talking about. You can see it in the Mayan ruins, or you can see it in Peru, and you can just see it with your eyes. You know, and then we talked about Göbekli Tepe and Baalbek and all these places all around the world. It's just so obvious when you look at them. And I'm interested to see that one in Turkey that you were talking about as well. But it's so obvious when you look at them that something was used, and it wasn't technology as we know it. It wasn't, you know, mechanical as such. Something else was going on. And whether we can ever get back to that, I'm not sure. I hope so, but, you know. But I suppose to finish then, we should, on the dwarfs or the little people, because obviously little people are still being seen and reported in America, and these are somewhat like miniature Bigfoots kind of description. But as far as dwarfs go, do we have any recent report, and gnomes, do we have any recent reports of people seeing them, you know, recently?
For example, on the Flores Islands of Indonesia, according to some locals, there are very few of them still left. And they are described pretty much as the little people of America that you just mentioned. And as far as Siberia, yes, I think they have severed their contacts with humans so recently, just a couple of hundreds of years ago, and went to live underground. I don't think they should have disappeared so fast. But I would like to mention that often on various continents we hear stories of abductions, that dwarves sometimes abduct human because they suffer from, is it called interbreeding?
What the dwarves do? So they need to increase their genetic gene pool,
Gene pool. So
they must be pretty similar to us then, if they're able to do that.
Yes, if they are able to make children with us then. Yeah.
I mean, we recently did a show on, I think it was Iceland, where a woman said she'd been taken by elves. I think that's what they call them there. But, you know, same thing. And they had raped her and was using her for that. So, I don't, you know. So it's...
But was this happening in our dimension or on the astral plane?
I'm not sure, because she said she was taken in. She said that I'm pretty sure she said that a hillside, that like a door in a hillside opened up, and she was taken inside the hill. And I think when she came out, she thought she'd been in there a couple of hours or whatever. When she came out, 7 years had passed.
Oh, oh.
So
okay.
We could be talking about another dimension, almost there, couldn't we?
Mm-hmm. Well, if... yeah, I wouldn't be surprised.
Hmm. So, yes, I suppose we won't know whether these creatures can access. I mean, you're sort of saying that, though, aren't you? You're sort of thinking along the lines of these creatures almost being from or able to access another dimension.
Oh, yes, they are always described as being very much into magic. And that's how we were also in the not so far away past. They decided to hide from us when we started diving deep into ignorance.
So, that's true. In the stories of the dwarfs, then, did we have any timescales how long these people could live for? Was it average, you know, the average time span of a human, or could they live for longer? Do we know?
No, that I don't know.
So that'd be interesting to find out, especially when you're talking about the genetic depletion. That would almost seem like they're not living as long, you know? Or maybe there's just fewer of them. Yeah.
Yeah, I got the impression from these legends, which are, by the way, in Asia and Europe, that they're just low in numbers. That's why they sometimes kidnap humans.
Mm. So the dwarves and the gnomes in Siberia, places like that, I mean, these obviously had access to materials, metals and such, and they obviously traded with people for other things that they didn't have access to. I'm presuming they would trade for furs or, you know, reindeer skins or whatever it was. I'm presuming by that they wore clothes, because the hobbits in Malaysia and Sumatra and jungle and places like that, and the little people in America, they're normally said to be naked. So did the dwarves, is that how we distinguish between the two? Did the dwarves wear clothing?
As far as I understand, they do, and they are far more civilized. But I think that's normal, because even we humans, even we have tribes right now in the Amazon jungle, which wander naked and have almost no signs of being civilized. They even eat raw. Even people, raw people, even nowadays, they're still tribes that attack other people, just kill them on the spot with stones and eat them raw. I'm sorry to describe such horrible scenes.
Mm-hmm.
But this is happening, not so much, but some of them still exist. And that is just a few hours drive away from civilized places.
Mm-hmm.
They could... maintain such a traditional way of life, so to say, just because the areas where they live are very inhospitable, full of all kinds of bugs and mosquitoes, and a few times per year being flooded completely, like 5 meters high flood. So we couldn't go and civilize them. So we know how humans
Nor should we.
Yeah, nor should we. But this is a very good example that, you know, they're also humans like us. They just live a bit differently. Mm. So what is the problem with the dwarves also having large differences inside their race in terms of living standards and higher achievements? It is possible, and at the end, maybe those dwarves survived, which live in more inhospitable areas.
I was wondering why, you know, is that's the reason why they tend to live underground, because of these places where they do live, like you say, you know, maybe they can't live in the open.
Yes, there is, sometimes people say that they always hide from sunlight because their eyes are not adapted for it. They have lived underground too much and their eyes become too wide. They have the feeling that they will burst out, so that's why they go out only at night.
Mm.
And this is something normal to happen over generations of living underground.
There was the underground, the tunnels and what you've talked about earlier. I mean, that's fascinating to me. And there is stories, and this is a bit more paranormal, I guess, but there is stories in London where they used to use tube stations, you know, train stations underground.
Mm-hmm.
At least you have them there, don't you? Well, they used to use them as air raid shelters, well, you know, back in the war. And actually, a lot of these stations, they're not disused now, but they're still there. And you hear stories of maintenance workers going down there. You know, these places have been shut off for, you know, 30, 40 years. But you hear stories of maintenance workers having to go down there to access cables and stuff, and actually running into these creatures, humanoid creatures that live on the ground. And they say they if you shine a light they don't like it, they don't like the light, they'll stay away from the light. Not dwarfs per se, but still humanoid creatures, you know. So, but
mm-hmm.
it takes on a more paranormal twist because you can't explain it, you know. But I wonder if these tunnels what you're talking about harbor these creatures.
Of course, they are connected to some creatures, but from my limited research on all these tunnels and underground cities, which seem to be connected with the tunnels, is that various races have lived in them and have reused them. Like there was this English scientist, he devoted, I believe, months of his life living in Turkey and studying the rock-cut underground cities over there. And his conclusion was that at some point they were reused by a race or races of dwarves because they were repairs, visibly secondary additions, and then the steps would be much smaller, like toilets, size of toilets, and then the beds and things like this would be adapted for smaller size people. So I think we should not always see the things like black and white. Okay, the tunnels were used by aliens, the tunnels were used by cavemen, the tunnels were used by dwarves. I think actually all of them used them at some point and reused them over the ages. So
I'm still using them.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Wow, it's interesting, isn't it? All of it, really. I mean, and the fact that it's not being looked into more serious, you know, particularly those tunnels and stuff. I mean, we just didn't have the technology to do that. You know, quarrying rock and excavating, getting it out, not just, you know, and then living underground is hazardous to humans generally anyway because of toxic build-ups and all the rest of it. So if whatever was living down there must have been able to breathe down there, you know? So you know, that's been part of the reason why we can't live on the ground now, unless we've got great ventilation. So I just wonder what we are dealing with. But I guess we don't know. Like you said, it could be all the things used them at some point. So have you got anything else I need to know about the dwarves that I've not asked?
Oh, that's a Well, in general, the situation with the dwarves, that we know so little about them, is because we don't want to know. Like, everything is this locking up of tunnels, making them secret, inability to explore them, hiding artifacts in the museums. All this is organized on government level. But when people go to elections, they never make this connection. They approach it very superficial, like the politicians are insulting each other with inappropriate words, or this is so superficial. People forget the main things. What kind of people we need? We need honest people who will tell us, who will open the truth for us, at least where we come from. Of course, this is not the main thing, but I mean, honesty also, where do we come from, and what kind of world do we live in even nowadays, which is even more important. So when people decide to venture beyond this superficial kindergarten level and think deeply before electing their leaders, then the revelation of the truth will come. And I think we are very far from it. I don't even see any movement, mass movement towards more sanity in the world in general. The ancient history is just one small part of it, of all it, of this cover-up of the real, of the reality, and making us live in an artificial reality of a horror movie, basically. That's what the world is turned into.
Absolutely, and that's and that seems to only look like it's going to accelerate over the coming years. So, yeah. But do you want to tell people where they can find you? I'm going to put a link in the show notes anyway, but if you want to...
Yeah, my website is megaliths.org. I'm attempting to make it the most interesting directory of ancient sites with a complete interactive map. I have never seen such a map anywhere else, containing all the interesting sites. All the other maps are very partial or deal with one aspect only. So megaliths.org is the website, and my YouTube channel is called New Earth.
New Earth, yeah, that's got some great videos on it. The maps are interesting because it don't matter whether you look talking about Bigfoots or you know, megalithic structures. Once you start putting them on a map, you can really see, you know, there's something going on. So that's definitely worth checking out. But yeah, so. Just remains to say thank you very much for coming on.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity to bring my message to people.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.